shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Bedtime turns me off and I don't mean maybe. 9 to 5 ain't taking me where I'm bound.
Okie dokie. Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us on a three-hour New Year's night, Nocturnal Journal tonight. We've got a lot going on. In the 9 to 10 hour, we're going to have a live performance from Mary Lane, blues singer, with special guest Billy Branch on harmonica. We're going to talk about, Molly, is it Chicago blues dancing?
Mostly blues, yeah. We can talk a little bit about swing and how they're related as well. But, yeah, my friend Sarah's on talking about blues.
So
dancing.
That'll precede Mary Lane. And then we got our friend Nora Barton coming in and her friends from Feed Restaurant in Humboldt Park. Molly McGowan's going to be our sidekick tonight. Thanks for joining us, Molly.
Oh,
you've been on the show
my
before.
Pleasure, yeah.
And our first guest, since it's New Year's Day and it's supposed to bring good fortune, and also since I was at a Black Eyed Peas party before this, we're going to talk about the history of Black Eyed Peas and why Black Eyed Peas are supposed to bring good luck on New Year's Day. So in the studio, we have in order Catherine Lambrecht of the Greater Midwest Foodways Alliance, who brought some Black Eyed Peas.
I sure did.
Thank you.
Recipe from Southern Living.
You've been on the show before. Charlotte Draper. Charlotte.
Hi.
Formerly of
Southern Living Magazine.
And Ebony. Ebony, right. And we also have Donald Battle Pierce, culinary historian, author. So thank you all for joining us. So start off with, why are we talking about Black Eyed Peas on New Year's Day?
Well, Black Eyed Peas.
And this is
Charlotte Draper. Mm-hmm. Black Eyed Peas are traditionally eaten on New Year's Day. They're considered good luck. And for some reason, they have been equated with coins. Coin money, and usually they're paired with greens, which represent folding money.
Right.
So everybody wants to have good luck and lots of money in the new year.
And what are the roots of them? I mean, talk about the migratory path. I mean, I've read all kinds of stuff. I read Thomas Jefferson. I mean, how far do they go back?
Well, actually, black eyed peas originated in Asia, mm-hmm. over in China, and they were brought to this country typically on slave ships when people were brought to the United States. Thomas Jefferson did have black eyed pea plants at his plantation in Virginia, and they have been used to feed livestock. So during the Civil War, they were not destroyed. However, they're a very healthy food, and they really sustained people after the Civil War, when so many people were impoverished, as well as the freed slaves.
And they travel. That sounds great.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Nice to know that they can go from one place to another and survive different climates.
Yes, they're very versatile, and they can be used in hot dishes, cold dishes, soups, stews, salad, and they can even be roasted and served as a snack.
Catherine.
Yes.
What's in the recipe? Talk about the recipe you brought in tonight, and then let's talk about variations on that recipe. There's probably not just one way to do black eyed peas.
Well, this was your basic. Well, let me tell you, going to look for black eyed peas on New Year's Day is not a good idea.
Uh-huh.
They're gone. Uh-huh. And so the only thing I picked up was canned. But I adapted the recipe. It was from Southern Living. It was classic Hoppin' John. And it was bacon that you cooked for a while, and then you added onions, pepper, some celery, some seasonings, and then you poured off some of the liquid and used that to cook the rice and then mix the two together at the very end. So it would have been better 2 hours ago, but what you have is what you have.
Uh-huh. Are there different variations to the recipe?
Yes, okay. There are Donna? Lots and
yeah.
lots. And there are lots that are being developed in there. I think of the the legends about where they came from and why. One of the things that I, as I look for soul food and food that's cultural, it means so much more to to us as a culture, to black people and as a culture, than just something to eat or as a legend or something to read in an old book. For a long time, those definitions or those places weren't cited, or they were just, you know, it was not as important as other historical information. So for me, for instance, Hoppin' John, the name of the dish, I had a Mari Evans, who was a Negro who came from the movement that in the 60s, and she was my teacher in black studies at IU back in the 70s, and she said, that name is not a name that our people would have ever called. And whenever I see it, I think of that. I remember she said, a black waiter hopping along with oversized lips and whatever. We think of black-eyed peas so much more spiritually, and they're so much more important than that. And so, you know, and you can, you'll see, sometimes it's still called that, but you'll see a lot of, and I, in early days, I would be thrilled to find any information I could find, and I would recite that as if that were real history. But I think what's happening right now is a lot of our history about food is being reevaluated and really being well-researched.
Language, I mean, Hoppin' John's became Skippin' Jenny's. I read that.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Leftovers.
That was leftovers?
The day after the day after the New Year's.
Yeah, the day after the New Year's?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For all of us here, are there strong memory pulls to this? Do you remember the first experience you had with this, with a grandmother, with a mother, sitting around the table? What are the memories of black-eyed peas?
Well, I think they are a traditional family recipe that are often served, certainly on New Year's Day. I was chatting with some folks at a new soul food restaurant, and one of the people said, well, they always had the black-eyed peas, but they also had sauerkraut and Polish sausage, which was surprising to me. But as I got into the research, I realized that that wasn't so atypical and very consistent with parts of the Midwest, as well as the Pennsylvania Dutch and Germans in West Virginia and also in Pennsylvania.
And when you take a look at the other kinds of foods that people eat on New Year's Day, like herring or corned beef and cabbage and the pork and cabbage and sauerkraut, these kinds of things, it isn't something that's inexpensive to give away. But you can make a whole lot of Hoppin' John or black-eyed peas and be part of a festive atmosphere and not break the bank.
Molly, I remember, like, you're from Vermont, right?
Yeah.
Was there a black-eyed pea scene up there? What was your first?
No.
That would be a good Ben and Jerry ice cream.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I know around the holidays we would usually do chocolate bread pudding, but there wasn't any significance to that. We just liked it.
Yeah, yeah.
And my family's from Mobile and
Mobile.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
And we had, I've never had a New Year's Day without black-eyed peas. But my grandmother added gumbo to that as well. Mm. But I think that's just because she wanted our family to always have gumbo, and it's always good luck. But I was in Paris about 10 years ago and scared to death that I wasn't going to be able to find black-eyed peas. And with my son, Monique Wells, who writes about history and black history in Paris and lives in there, brought me some because I had to have a bite.
What are the health benefits to black-eyed peas?
Well, they're certainly a very nutritious food. They are not a complete protein, but once you pair them with rice, you do have a complete protein, an excellent source of fiber, and they are a carbohydrate, which again is a good source of energy. And when you think of feeding people who were enslaved and or impoverished, that's what you wanted, something that was going to give you a lot of energy over a longer period of time. So it was an excellent food source.
Do you know if there's any like relationship between black-eyed peas and other types of bean or legumes?
Well, black-eyed peas actually are a bean, contrary to their name. they are a bean, and they're in the legume family. So they have that legume-bean connection. like so many other beans, they're high in fiber, good source of energy, carbohydrate. And again, when you pair them with rice, that'll give you a complete protein.
I'm just thinking, I spent some time in East Africa, actually, mm-hmm. and pigeon peas were, like, yes. the most nutritious mm-hmm. bean we could get, or legume that we could get there.
I hear it most often described as related to mung beans.
Yes, that goes back to the connection from China. They are related to the mung bean, as Donna said. And they also, black-eyed peas are also considered cow pea or a pigeon pea. So there is that connection in the bean family.
Okay, we got to take a break. I want to come back and talk about the future of this, like with vegan soul food and things like that, where this is going to go, and also other New Year's traditions. We'll talk about that. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Pass the peas like you used to say. Pass the peas like you used to say. Pass the peas like you used to say. Pass the peas like you used to say.
Let's just play that for a while. The JBs. We're talking about Black Eyed Peas on Nocturnal Journal with Molly McGowan, our sidekick tonight. And on our panel, we got Catherine Lambrecht of the Greater Midwest Foodways Alliance, Charlotte Draper, I have here formerly of Ebony, but more than that, and Donna Battle Pierce, author, culinary historian. You know, I mean, they're served with ham hocks sometimes.
Yep.
And when I did the book on soul food a few years ago, I mean, there was just this movement just starting with vegan soul food. I think it's really exploding now. Maybe we can touch on that, too. But how do you see this falling into the modernization of soul food and soul food moving away from some of the traditions?
Well, there's always been, vegetarian soul food.
Yeah.
Not vegan necessarily, but they've always been. And it's always been healthier, I think, than it's been given credit for.
Elaborate on that.
The fact that so many vegetables, that meat wasn't a big part of everything. It wasn't like big steaks and big roasts and whatever. If meat was involved, it was oftentimes, for economy, it was often just a small amount of it. And when you talk about the meat in the black-eyed peas, you know, it depends on the region and whatever. And I know that with the ham hocks, the smoked turkey. Mm-hmm. And then I use, my family uses the smoked Spanish chorizo because it's the most similar that you can find outside of the South to the Creole sausage.
I see.
Wow,
I see.
Good.
I see. Yeah, elaborate on that.
Well, I think that certainly soul food traditionally has not included a lot of meat items. The meat just wasn't typically available to so many the African Americans, and people learned to make do with what they had. They learned to flavor, whether it was the black-eyed peas or red beans and rice, whatever bean they were cooking with. They learned to flavor with lots of spices and seasonings, and they learned how to extend the amount that they had. So the fact that it's become very popular for vegans or vegetarians at this time really is not surprising. It's sort of a natural.
In your circles, do you just hear more people talking about black-eyed peas, or it's always been on the radar?
Always.
My friend tonight, she's been having a party for a long time.
Yeah. Right. Always.
Yeah. Always. Yeah. Always on the radar.
But you said there was a run on them tonight to find some.
Well, there's always been a run on them, too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Can I just say how delicious these were?
Excellent.
Best recipes.
Yeah, we're passing around, like that song said, pass them around. You know, there you had some kick to this. Talk about
what there's a little bit of cayenne in there.
Uh-huh.
That's only a quarter teaspoon.
Yeah.
That's not very much, but the kick is present.
Did the recipe call for that, or did you
add it? Yes, it did.
Now, we're going to try to get that recipe posted on the podcast so listeners can see it.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay? Southern Living would be very happy.
Now, I know a little bit about this, but talk about, you told me about this, Karen. The Black Eyed Peas Appreciation Society in 1937, where you joined for a dollar,
for
a penny?
A penny.
A penny? Okay, talk about that.
So there was this guy named Elmore Torn, and he was from East Texas. And he came and learned about the Black Eyed Peas and the tradition of of good luck it brings. He called them lucky peas. And, you know, this was in the 1937. We're talking the Depression era still. And they were looking for anything that would add value to agricultural stuff. They started marketing black-eyed peas heavily.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where even Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Kate Smith were talking about eating their lucky black-eyed peas on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
It was a very active campaign, and it really, I would say, probably put black-eyed peas on the map relative to our culture today.
Some of these notes, there were these oil men who went to Vegas, and they had black-eyed peas for breakfast in the morning, and they won over $10,000.
Yeah, that really sold the idea that they were lucky.
I don't know if you want to see this, yeah. So that maybe that kind of started the whole popularization thing?
I would think so.
Uh-huh. Mass market.
Crossover,
maybe,
yeah. Right.
Crossover from black culture.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but it was probably one of those things that was little known outside of the black culture.
Right.
And that's great, because it...
Well, in a way.
Yeah.
You know, better to be known than not known.
Yeah. Cash had a question. Good question, too. Best way to grow them. Charlotte, you want to take that?
Well, I've not grown any personally, but they are one of the crops that are very beneficial to the soil. They add nitrogen to the soil, and that would be beneficial for other food items that grow in that same plot of land.
Mung beans are pretty easy to sprout, at least, I imagine.
Yeah,
if you get the right soil.
My dad was in Tuskegee and studied the last few years of George Washington Carver. But he was a city kid who went there and fell in love with agriculture. So we always had a giant garden growing up. And he could never grow black peas.
Really?
That was in, where was that, in Mobile?
In Missouri.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Really? In Missouri?
We were first generation Great Migration, my sisters and brother and myself. They moved to Columbia.
Oh, okay.
The center of the state.
Yeah.
And he grew everything else. He grew sweet potatoes, he grew but he never could have a successful crop.
Wow. This might be tough. Three facts about black-eyed peas that people don't know. The whole marketing thing was one thing I didn't know, but what's an obscure fact about them?
They're originally from China and are related to the mung bean.
Yeah.
And so we have two.
Could they also be related to the soybean, too? Because there's soybeans that have that black eye, and there are soybeans that don't.
I didn't see that in any of the stuff I read in the past few days, but that doesn't mean they're not connected somewhere in that bean family.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. What else, Donna?
One of the things I read about how they survived when they were used a lot for animal feed as well, and when Sherman marched through the South and destroyed crops, one of the crops that he didn't destroy were the black-eyed peas. Mm-hmm. And then everybody who was so impoverished, and that's where cross-culturally they became popular, started to realize these are pretty tasty. And so that was a way that they survived all of that, or they passed on.
The cross-cultural thing, we got a break for the news in a minute, but the shared heritage is really important. There's a quote here from Ashana Bailey. It was in the New York Times just a couple of weeks ago. She has the restaurant in Savannah. Like, a broader reach through a broader table, you know. So the fact that people are talking about this.
I agree. But I agree that also what's missing is attribution. And also co-opting some of the things. One of the only things one of the reasons I got so involved with soul food was because we didn't have names. We had names that were given to us. We didn't have a lot of history at the time. We didn't have a lot of anything else. But food was one of the things that all black people could share in common. So instead of it being a joke, that always bothers me when it becomes something, a toss-off or whatever, because it's a very significant cultural part for us of joining people together.
When I've done food books, one thing I get a kick out of, and I don't know how much this has been in your research, is just finding the old handwritten recipes. It really, really resonates with me to have someone go through their files or go up in the attic or go in the basement and find the recipes that were handed down. Do you see that with this?
Yes, I do. Except for the fact, too, when people will say the first recipe was printed in this book, you know, people maybe forget that it was illegal for blacks to learn how to read and write.
So
a lot of times these things were conveyed, but they were not because somebody came up, you know, in her parlor with this idea or cooked it in her kitchen. It was almost always gotten from the African Americans that were...
I think I heard just the other day on the radio that people sometimes put a dime in it. Is that a new phenomenon, or is that a
That's a real old
tradition?
One.
That's
okay.
A very old one.
Okay, we're going to take a break for the news. I'm going to keep you on for a little bit. I want to talk, and then we're going to talk. I want to talk about your own projects. You can plug what you're doing, and then we'll talk a little bit more about soul food and Southern food. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal.
What you gonna do with all that junk inside that trunk?
I'ma get you drunk, get you love drunk off my hump.
What you gonna do with all that ass inside the jeans?
I'ma make you scream, make you scream, make you scream. Cause of my hump, my hump, my hump, my hump.
What?
My hump, my hump, my hump. My lovely lady lumps, check it out.
I met a girl down at the disco. She said, hey, yeah, let's go.
Okay. Hey, Nora Barton, you know, that's the Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, boy, I love that.
So welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. We're talking about Black Eyed Peas with Molly McGowan, our sidekick tonight.
Woo-hoo.
Thanks for joining us, Molly. Catherine Lambrecht of Greater Midwest Foodways Alliance. Charlotte Draper. I'm going to give you another... background thing besides what I've been saying of Ebony Magazine.
Well, I have a blog called Chow Chow and Soul.
Right.
That takes up a fair amount of time. Yeah. So that keeps me busy.
And Donna Battle Pierce.
Right.
Well, let's go around the table. I want to talk about, like I said, soul food and Southern food. But let's find out what you guys are out doing and plug your projects. So, Donna, what have you been up to?
Well, I am, and actually I'm a former assistant food editor at the Tribune, Chicago Tribune, and test kitchen director. And I find what's so beautiful as a journalist is that I combine my cooking and I test recipes, and when I do that, my writing is so much better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently working on a book about Frida DeKnight and Great Migration recipes, and these are people that what happened with Southern food outside of the South. And how they changed, and how some things are more representative of old school traditions because they came here and stayed just the way they were, as opposed to evolving, you know, in the South.
Give me an example of that.
Of one of the ones did.
Yeah,
I remember oxtail. We had a conference when Edna Stewart from Edna's was still alive.
Uh-huh.
And I loved her so much, and what an amazing woman. And at her restaurant, Southern Foodways came up, John T. Edge and different others. And everybody agreed, this is like the historic taste. And it's because she had it from a recipe that had been a family recipe, and in Chicago wasn't as challenged as it was as a chef would change, and as a Savannah chef, had, you know, evolved and changed and kind of she kept it the old way.
Charlotte?
Well,
I swear you've been on the show before, but you haven't.
Well, I can come back and visit another
time.
As I mentioned, I have a blog, Chow Chow and Soul, and what I try to do with my blog is encourage people to cook with confidence as they're cooking or creating or remaking a family recipe. I want people to feel confident as they're moving forward to create new family memories. And one of the things that I did in preparation for today's show was a very quick qualitative survey on what people ate for New Year's Day. And most people that responded do eat greens of some sort. Primarily collard greens, but people do eat a blend of mustard greens, kale, turnip greens. And I also had about 10% of the respondents ate okra as well as eating sauerkraut, which was surprising. And it was abundantly clear that most of my respondents did eat pork, again, a food that's associated with richness because pork generally is a fatty food.
What about pickled herring?
Well, pickled herring is considered one of the lucky a lucky food, and that silver color of the herring is equated with silver and wealth or riches, money. So again, that's the connection with the pickled herring. But I didn't have that question in my survey.
I think I do remember being really young, in like third grade-ish, and there was a discussion of these types of traditions, and pickled herring was one that was brought up.
And the sauerkraut and the cabbage, I think of as Baltimore for some reason. I wonder if those respondents came from Baltimore and from that area.
Well, I think some of the connection with the sauerkraut and the Polish sausage is could very well be back in days when people were actually mining. Like, I have a cousin who lived in a mining town, and they had, they were like shotgun houses, and the family next door was Polish. And he said he could speak Polish better than he could speak English up until the time he went to school.
Catherine, what's up with you?
Oh, well, I've been working on a Illinois Bicentennial Project, which finished yesterday because it had to finish yesterday because I needed a copyright for 2018.
Oh, really?
The Bicentennial of Illinois was 2018. You know, I cannot do it 2019. And it's a collection of recipes and histories that we obtained via a family heirloom recipe contest at the Illinois State Fair for the last 10 years. But I was thinking about your comment, Donna, about the about Edna's and the food. One thing that has happened, for instance, the Polish, I'll just give as an example, but the Polish community here in Chicago serves food that is old-timey and largely unknown back in the old country. It's kind of like there's that tradition, though, that immigrant family, these are that food that meant a lot to us.
Right.
And we pass it on to our family, and it becomes part of the family tradition. But then you get the outsider who's coming from Poland, and it's like, gee, I haven't seen that in our place in years. So sometimes we're almost, when you're isolated, like Edna was in a sense from the Southern culture, you know.
Right.
You sometimes hold on to things mm-hmm. that other mm-hmm. people have tried it and now moved on.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, too, my Skillet Diaries.
Mm-hmm.
Skillet Diaries and Black America Cooks are the two places where, and I have a not-for-profit where I join seniors with kids, and the kids, we talk about journalism and how to do biographies and do those type of things. And the seniors share their recipes and their
stories. Oh, that's
stories.
A great idea.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah.
And how can people find out about that?
Oh, you can do it from Skillet Diaries or Black America Cooks.
And are there websites for that?
I have a link. Yeah, those are the websites.
Okay.
SkilletDiaries.com and BlackAmericaCooks.com.
Well, how long have you been doing the stuff with the kids?
I've been doing that. I did it with the city about 4 years ago. And now I do it in small groups in schools and whatever else. It's one of the ways for me, make this recipe once a year, to save this recipe and to understand then how important those memories are is very important.
All you guys, I mean, the path that we touched on it earlier, but the I brought Edna Lewis in here, but I'm not going to refer to it yet. What's the place up in Andersonville? They're old disciples of them.
Big Jones.
Big Jones, yeah. Mm-hmm. They use this as a thing. Talk about the migratory past. We touched on that, but that's just essential to our conversation. Elaborate on that.
Right, the people from the South in a lot of ways that came up at different times. My family in the 50s came up from, and it began though at the turn of the century before then, as people would leave often awful conditions to come. My parents were both college graduates, and they left because they wanted their children not to be a part of segregation. And they decided they were leaving all the stuff they had behind to do that. And so what they did too is it was hard to find food.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my mother wanted to make gumbo, all she had in Columbia, Missouri at the AMP were the little frozen shrimp. and she didn't have filet. So my grandparents, when they would come to visit us on the train, they would come with giant coolers, you know, of oysters and crab and shrimp, and my parents were thrilled. And they would tell us maybe we would want something else to eat because they wanted to eat all of it. But no, we would all have the big gumbo.
Yeah, right. I mean, it really does take you to
right.
another place.
And that's the great migration. Yeah. So a lot of things changed. There's a cookbook written in 1926 of 13 black women in Montana. And there are places you don't realize that here are people, and that was part of the movement that it went on to California. Eventually, a lot of those families moved on, but there were people all over the country that were there and bringing food that they had grown up with that was important to them.
Isn't that something? In the time we have left, I kind of want to set the table for the next. I'm glad you got that for the next discussion. And it's something that people talk about. I mean, what's the difference between, I've been teasing this throughout the segment, between soul food and Southern food? I mean, and some of our guests coming up are from Feed in Humboldt Park. And, you know, it's Southern food, Chicken Shack stuff. Is there a big difference between soul food and Southern food? Or are they the same thing, just under a different name?
I think that many of the foods that are under the Southern food umbrella, traditionally, so many African Americans were from the South.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that crossover and intertwining of the foods. But when you say soul food, you know, I just feel like that has a lot more of the family connection and emotion tied in with the food and with the meal. Because certainly a meal is really an opportunity to sit down and exchange information and ideas and make connections with your family members or even your ancestors. So that's kind of my interpretation of what soul food is.
What do you think of all these like celebrity chefs and new restaurants that are coming up that are getting like Bib Gourmand types of awards and things that have, you know, come from roots foods or mm-hmm. Southern foods?
Well, as Nana mentioned, I do think it's important that where the food comes from, that there is that attribution as to the history of the food. And certainly when people receive awards and acclamation about the food or their menu, if they're not people of color, they should recognize, well, this originally started with people of color and we adapted it or we've made a few changes, but I do want to give credit to the beginnings where the food came from and where it started. That would really be the thing to do.
Who's doing that well, would you say?
The attribution?
Yeah.
I think Big Jones does a good job here in the city.
Right.
Yeah.
And the food is pretty phenomenal at his restaurant.
Yeah.
Jennifer Booker's coming there at the end of this month, who's a black chef in Atlanta, who's coming there to cook and to talk about that. Do you have a second for one thing about soul food, though?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Carla Hall's new book. And Carla Hall, at the very beginning, kept saying that, no, she didn't really, she was kind of general and whatever. And her recent transformation with the soul food cookbook that she wrote, she said something that Frieda DeKnight said back in the in 1948 when she wrote her book, "By Us, For Us," was her. And Carla said the same thing, and she said, soul food is cooked by black people. That's the difference. It can be anything. It's not a specific dish. It's not necessarily this. But I always say in my presentations, imagine Reba McEntire sings Respect and Aretha Franklin. And to me, that's the difference. That's a difference of soul food.
Yeah, I wouldn't see Paula Deen doing soul food. But no,
that's a whole other subject.
Oh, yeah, I would like to be. But yeah, Big Jones, they do a great job of talking about Edna Lewis up there. He's been on the show, and you know they talk about what.
And he's
influence.
From Southern Indiana.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, when I did the research on my book, I would go around and talk to people about what what is soul? And one of the common, just because I like soul music, and one of the common responses I got was, you know, soul is from the heart, soul is love. And that mm-hmm. that can come through, in, obviously, in the food, right?
True, very
yeah.
true.
Yeah. What else, in the time we have left, which is not much, but any other, what else is happening with soul food restaurants here? I mean, you mentioned Big Jones, and what's
Big
the scene
Jones
like?
Big Jones is not really a soul
yeah,
food
right.
restaurant.
Well, it's Southern food.
Right.
Yeah. What's the scene like here?
Well,
where else would you go? Yeah.
There's a new restaurant in Hyde Park, Virtue Soul Food, and I have not had an opportunity to eat there yet, but I did spend some time at the restaurant about a week ago, and I found the people very warm and hospitable, so I'm looking forward to dining with Virtue next week.
And they're in Hyde Park?
Yes.
Yes.
Is Soul Veg still open on the Far South side? Soul Vegetarian?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing okay.
But a lot of the classic soul food places are gone, aren't they?
Well, I think the ones that traditionally there weren't as many options for eating, you like Isola's and Edna's and
I miss Army and Lou's.
And Army and yeah. Lou's. And what was the one that was in Bronzeville that so many of the celebrities went to when they came to town? They were on Indiana.
I used to keep track in Waukegan. There used to be a number of soul food restaurants. But they would kept coming and going so fast, I kind of gave up on the project.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's
to talk
a pleasure.
About Black Eyed Peas on New Year's night. Thank you, Donna Battle Pierce.
Thank you.
Charlotte Draper.
Thank you, Dave.
Catherine Lambrecht. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
Bringing in the food.
You're welcome, and you got my book in
yeah,
that disc.
And come back and talk about that sometime.
So great.
We'll be back with Nora Barton and some music and stuff about feed after this on WGN.